Yes, so he was born in Castlemaine in 1927, the son of a grocer, and his mother was a Rusden. So from that side of the family, he was influenced with arts and culture and books. She was the first woman to graduate from Melbourne University in 1920 with a Master of Arts in Literature. So he developed a taste. He saw himself as part academic, part tradie, because he was as rough as bags to look at, and in his dress, sometimes even in his voice. And I'm sad I never got to meet him, but I'm going off the stories people have told me about him. But, you know, he did love his culture. He was very influenced by the great philanthropic collections of America, such as the Huntington Collection. He learnt to play the piano from his aunt Bonnie Rusden, who was a concert pianist who studied with artist Schnabel. So he made his money through SSW supermarkets, self-service wholesalers. He brought the self-service industry to Australia, country Victoria, in the 1950s, and he turned his dad's humble corner store into the first ever self-service supermarket. And that is now Stoneman's Bookstore in Castlemaine, or Castlemaine if you're a local. When he retired in 1992, he bought Deneira Mount Macedon because he needed more wall space for his art collection, which he was very serious about. He collected art for his own enjoyment, not for showing off or for real estate value. So it's an eclectic collection, supporting a lot of young Australian artists and a lot of female artists. He was a great supporter of Alice Bale, for example, A.M.E. Bale, and Marion Ellis Rowan, a Mount Macedon artist. But he also has a Rodin and a Rembrandt and an Andy Warhol in the collection. What's on the walls at the moment is only one third of the collection. He was a huge supporter of McCubbin, and in fact he bought McCubbin's property before the current owners had it, or bought it off him in the 70s. So there was a great love and nurturing of Australian art there. The other thing was he loved his music, obviously, from his art. We've got a Steinway grand sitting here in the lounge room, where we put on our arts and cultural events in this wonderful room. And it's a Hamburg grand piano Steinway that we recently had refurbished. And we've been complimented on it. We had Nikolai Demidenko staying here for the Wood and Winter Arts Festival, and he complimented us on what a fine little piano it is. You're also on the floor, all over the property. Oh, you can see gorgeous carpets, silk and wool from Uzbekistan and Afghanistan, handmade. These Persian rugs were bought on the advice of Susan Scollet. So they form a very important part of the art collection. They are heritage carpets made with natural dyes. They're absolutely beautiful. This room where we put on our events also features his favourite furniture, including that music stand. It's a string quartet music stand. I'm a classical musician by training, and I've never seen anything like it, where the cellist and the viola player sit down to play and the violinist can stand up. So I'm sure the music making is much more intimate when you have eye contact on this level. And then you can see on the fireplace is an urn, and in it are the ashes of his prize-winning llama, Duane. Where there are still 20 llamas on the property further north, another 500 metres up from here. And Stuart Stoneman planted a grove of chestnut trees, which the llamas nestle underneath. So I think I mentioned that we have 20,000 books in the library here, many of them first edition, and we've been told we're on the level of the State Library of Victoria. But it is, again, an eclectic collection of books. He was somebody who liked to take the opposing point of view for its own sake, so books on politics and religion abound of various ideas. He was not at all closed-minded, very open to new thoughts. So what we do, when he died in 2002, he left all his money to the S.R. Stoneman Foundation, including this property and its contents, and they hired me in 2009 to start up operations here in 2010 as a result of what they saw me doing with the Wood End Winter Arts Festival, which I formed in 2004. But I wanted it right from the beginning to have a very different personality and to be true to the integrity of this property, so not in any way to echo the Wood End Winter Arts Festival, which is a high art festival, but to be sympathetic to the surroundings here. So yes, we have art lectures, house tours, garden tours, concerts. We've had Julian Burnside, Barry Jones speaking here, Clark and Dore, Don Watson, which is how he found out about this place, and those sorts of things. We also have educational events. Gateways is a gifted education program for state primary school children. We know that the state primary school kids in the area are suffering from constant government cuts, and so especially the kids at the top end suffer. And so we donate the property for the use of Gateways to run these programs for children from grade 4 to grade 6. And they sit in the dining room and do writing courses or science courses or whatever, and it's really terrific. terrific. So we now open the gardens. We've given over the opening of the gardens, I should say, as fundraisers for local community groups, because we live in a very dynamic region and there are lots of community groups fundraising for all sorts of things. And we want our gardens to be loved. These are manicured gardens dating from 1872 and have a phenomenal collection of trees from around the world. In the way that the wealthy would compete with their artwork and their furniture to show off against each other, they did it with their gardens as well. So it was all about buying something nobody else had. And, you know, I think we've got the best driveway in Australia. Although it's 1 kilometre long, the first 500 metres are Dutch elms that are growing way above sea level. So they look like younger trees because they've never really matured. And they were planted in 1872, about 91 of them. And then in springtime, we have the biggest carpet of bluebells that come out. So if you think of visiting us during the Cup weekend, that sort of time of year, end of October, early November, it's just a Monet display of bluebell colour. Absolutely sensational. So it's a very, very special garden. So I was hired to maximise use of the property and to bring in income also to help maintain the property, because like all these properties in Europe, they're very expensive to keep going. We come with our own water source though, because Suetonius Officer, who developed the land back in the 1870s, was an irrigationist. So he was very aware of the nastiness of Australian droughts. So we are attached to a natural spring. We have our own dam. We've got massive water tanks that Stuart Stoneman put in, and a dam reservoir that feeds into the property as well. So we have over 4 million litres of fresh water on the property, and we do our watering from that. And of course, being on the right side of the mountain, we have cocoa chocolate soils, and we get these rolling mists. We've got the biggest rhododendron collection in Australia, and they're literally Himalayan size. They adore the sort of miserable weather we're sitting in at the moment, where the clouds roll in and feed them. But if you go on YouTube and Google Deneira, you'll see them in full bloom, with some great shots taken by Michael Dillon from a drone overlooking the whole property, the 38 acres. It's really special. So many of the great old trees here are from 1872. We are doing succession planning with the Dutch elms because they're getting towards the end of their life, and we're filming that at the moment in association with Flemings, the propagation of more Dutch elms for the future. Baby ones are being made as we speak.
Tell me a bit about the history of the house itself.
Yes.
Who owned it?
So Suetonius Officer was the original visionary who purchased a series of parcels of land that are long and skinny like a banana in 1872 to build a holiday house to escape the Melbourne heat, because we're about 10 degrees colder than Melbourne. And because of his work as an irrigationist and pastoralist, he put in all the irrigation before he planted any trees. Mount Macedon was denuded of trees in the 1840s as a result of all the logging and building of the gold fields. And they didn't expect the Australian trees, the natives, to grow back. So it was on the title that he had to wood the property with European timber trees. They have been our saving grace because of the bushfires, I have to say, and the CFA keep reconfirming that it's what saved us from being burnt down in 1983. So he was only here for a short time. He built the house in 1875, a smaller version of what we're in. This room wasn't here then, just as a summer retreat. It's triple brick, 3 million bricks in the walls, and they're handmade from Bendigo, and they were all brought up by buggy, horse and buggy. After that, it was sold to James Smith Reed, who was a mining magnate and owned some private railroads in Australia. James Smith Reed was an innovator in his industries and owned mansions around Australia, but again had the Toorak house. And this was purchased again as a summer house to escape the heat in 1880. He added more bedrooms. In 1912, he built this gorgeous billiard table room, which became the lounge room eventually, and also the dining room. In 1891, he built the gatehouse at the front of the property. His family owned it for the longest period of ownership, 50 years, and it probably was the happiest period of ownership here too. Big, bustling family that loved coming up here for exorbitant Christmas celebrations. I've met his granddaughter. She's close to 100 years old now, living in the North Shore. She told me that it was just amazing living up here. Over summer, they'd get miserable summers. They'd be sitting inside playing many games of bridge and having lots of cups of tea. And the servants lived on site in the servant wing and would look after them. Arthur Streeton was a family friend, and he painted a painting of this property that's never been displayed, and still in the family ownership. So James Smith Reed retired in 1912, which is when he did the renovations here, and retired to here, to Deneira. Oh, I forgot to mention, Deneira is a Scottish name from the officers. Dun meaning mountain. Locals have taken to calling it Denira because of the I in the spelling, and there's great offence when I call it Denira. But I have actually emailed Denira in Scotland to get the correct pronunciation, and the officer family are very grateful for the correct pronunciation. So then in 1922, James Smith Reed died, and his widow and daughter took over the running of the property. Eventually, when the daughter died in 1940, the house was sold to George Nicholas, and he bought it as a wedding present for his daughter Betty, who became Betty Alcock. She married a GP, Alcock, from the billiard table family. She had over 20 years here, and it was a house of lavish parties that were typical, but Mount Macedon was changing. World War II had changed the whole landscape of living up here. These places were becoming very expensive to run. If you couldn't have free in-living servant help, such as people living in the gatehouse doing your veggie patch for you, everybody was taking off and getting jobs, including women. So a lot of these properties went up for sale. Not so Denira. It struggled on, or kept on, I should say. And I met Hepzibah Minuan's son, Cron Nicholas, and he came back up here for a book launch on his mother's biography and said it really hasn't changed, but the neutral tones the foundation have adopted for showing off the artwork and furniture weren't the case back then. They had lavish red carpets and really outrageous colour schemes, as were the parties, apparently. So he remembers many a happy time here. Then it was sold to Keith Allen, who is an antiques dealer from Brighton. Keith and his partner Rex moved up here and tried to turn it into more of a business proposition. They actually removed many of the heritage features off the property and sold it in their antiques dealer's business in Brighton, including the original Scottish blue slate tiles that were on the roof. Then it was sold to Laurie Matheson and his wife Christine in the late 70s. He had business dealings that went pear-shaped in Moscow, and this was their summer their holiday house that ended up becoming their principal place of residence. He was a very brilliant man, a very industrious man. He was the head frogman for the Australian Navy that went looking for Harold Holt's body when it disappeared. He was fluent in Russian and Korean and a whole spate of languages. So he's precociously gifted. And Denira became a place where he would entertain a lot of Russian officials, have lavish parties himself. He became the mentor and philanthropist supporting Peter Schippenhine, the brilliant Australian Carrara marble sculpturist. And he himself boasted a collection, apparently, of French Impressionist paintings that lined the walls here. And when he and his wife saved the property from being burnt down from the Ash Wednesday fires in 83... and, of course, saved the art collection as well. Because of his involvement with ASIO, he was the height of the inquiry that went on in 83, so I think he was going through a pretty bad time then with the bushfires and all, and by 1987 had died. His widow sold the property to Stuart Rustin Stoneman as his retirement home in 1992, and we come full circle. So there's only been 7 owners here, but all very colourful, brilliant characters, high achievers in their various fields, and each very much a product of their time, I think, too.